Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez, and yes, Jamie Bluma. What's up, Bluma?
Good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Better today than yesterday? I think everybody's a little better today than yesterday.
Yeah. It was just, you know, it's frustrating because you just don't, I mean, we're spoiled.
That's right. To have the ball with the opportunity to win a game again.
It's just, we're spoiled because, again, the defense has been the biggest problem, but what do we always say? Well, what have we said the last couple of years?
Give Mahomes the ball at the end of the game, he's going to win.
We got Mahomes got the ball at the end. I'll take that. I'll sign up for that every game.
Yep.
No doubt.
And both games, Mahomes has had the ball with a chance to win. And I'm not talking about the last-ditch effort, you know, on Sunday. I'm talking about the possession where he threw the interception. Like, you get me right there when they take the ball over. I'm telling you, they're not going to turn the ball over this week in this situation. They're going to win this game. And I thought that they were headed right towards beating Baltimore. And so it's extremely frustrating. We're all spoiled because Patrick Mahomes is so wonderful. But he is still Patrick Mahomes. And the Chiefs are still going to win the division, so I need people just relax.
Put our back against the wall a little bit.
And you know what? That'll make it even sweeter. You know
Rise
what it is? I'm
top.
Glad you brought
the.
You know what
Rise
it is?
To the top.
I'm going to tell you exactly what it is, Bluma. And I'll be the first one to admit it. I, Stephen with a V, Philip with one L, St. John, period, please, have taken the AFC West for granted. And I no longer appreciated it the way I should. Of course they're going to win the AFC West. Now tell me who they're playing in the Super Bowl, huh? That's me, Mr. Overconfident. And I took it for granted. And we shouldn't take it for granted. Because for a long, long time before Andy Reid got here, the AFC West championships were few and far between. And we need to relish it. We need to appreciate it. And it'll be a great chapter of the story. Hey, remember after 3 weeks, the Chiefs were two games back, and then Broncos and Raiders fans started sending out that meme. Have you seen the meme now that's making its way around Twitter?
I don't know that I have.
You know, I'll tell them, Jay. Tell them about it. You've seen it?
It's a picture of the other three quarterbacks in this division.
Pointing at Mahomes.
It says point at the guy in last place.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know what? I think that
you got to take your victory lap after week three because that's the only time you're going to get it.
Got to get that meme out there while you can.
There's nothing like spiking the football when you're at the 50-yard line, like you scored a touchdown, you know?
Look, the Raiders
really more like the 30-yard line.
What did they win week six last year? They won that whole week.
They drove their bus all around the place.
And then what happened to them afterwards?
Lap.
Oh, they lost.
Right.
I love when people spike the football in the middle of the field. Hey, look at me!
You haven't seen
this. I got a first down!
You haven't seen this
celebration.
Stupid meme?
Yeah. I kind of like it.
I don't want to see it.
I do kind of like it.
Yeah. I kind of like it.
Because guess what it's going to be? It's going to lead to, at the end of the season, us retweeting
bulletin board material.
Then what happened?
Bulletin board material.
How it started, how it's
going.
Yeah, see, I've seen those. It's going to be a picture of each one of those quarterbacks like face down in the mud.
Whoa. Listen to this guy's getting physically
That's where it's going.
Brutal there.
That's how it'll be going. It is not a birthright to win the division, though. I mean, Andy Reid's made it feel that way because they win the division.
You know all
year.
About that.
Yeah.
You used to come in here and say, it's my right for Kansas to win the Big 12.
Right, birthright.
Man, oh, man.
Yep.
So aren't you cocky?
Over the last 3 years, what is our divisional record? I mean, that's crazy.
100-0?
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned.
It's not, but
it felt like it to the other teams, I bet. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. Like KU fans think, oh, birthright to win the Big 12. Birthright to go to the NCAA tournament. You start from there, That's just the baseline. Right. And then you, anything better than then it's now. Can we go to the NCAA
tournament?
That's
been me the past couple of years. And I apologize.
Yeah. Create a monster.
It's been, of course, they're in the AFC West. Now tell me who they're playing in the AFC Championship game.
Right.
Got to keep feeding the monster.
Who's the monster?
It's been us.
Yeah. We're the monsters.
We do have some spoiled Chiefs fans that don't really remember what it was like in the 90s.
Because they weren't Chiefs fans then.
Yeah, right. So, right.
Tough to remember something you didn't experience.
Right.
Bluma, how was Bluma-palooza?
It was awesome.
Red, white, and Bluma.
It was,
man, it was a beautiful night, by the way.
It was perfect, man. I apparently, when you have bad weather for 6 years, you get good weather for two. It was incredible. I can't thank everybody that helped and was there, my volunteers, all the sponsors. I could go on and on and on. I think we're going to get really close to raising $100,000 the other night when all the everything gets counted up. So it was great. Thank you to Joe Efforts, Stonegate. Thank you to Travis and Noe and their bands. Thank you to Emily McNeil for all the things that she did to help as well. Plus all the volunteers that I had help that night. I can just go around. You know, Nate was there. I try to take the opportunity to go around and thank everybody for being there and make sure everybody's having a good time. And it couldn't have been a better night.
Everybody was having a good time.
It was great.
Mr. Beavis is just phenomenal, by the way. I almost took down an entire order of the pulled pork nachos myself. Our boy John Poteet was out there.
Funnel cake fries are delish.
Dude, So somebody told me to get the pulled pork nachos, and I did. And then right as I was walking away, somebody came up and ordered the funnel cake fries. And I was like, I think I've made a mistake. I think I should have gone for that. You know, but I didn't try those.
Delicious.
Yeah. It was a great night. The auction items were awesome. The raffle items were awesome. It was fun. The music was great. It was beautiful outside.
It was beautiful outside. Not a ton of wind. It was nice to get Lisa Bolt, or Sarah, excuse me. Sarah came and sang the national anthem.
Man, she's
to get us
good.
Going. Man, she killed
she
it.
She is good.
That was awesome. That was a special little late entry, late surprise.
Is that right?
So I was glad she was able to come over and do that and get that. Zeke Crozier, we sold his bottle cap flag. We actually sold it twice. We sold it $10,000 twice. So that was that was amazing. Just an awesome night. So thanks to everyone. And look forward to picking a date to do it again next year. I can't believe that was number 8.
Wow.
That's 8 now?
That was number 8. Yep.
Man.
We were kind of recapping over the course of the night. Just because the site, and Stephen, you've been, Nate, you've been, it's kind of changed over the last 8 years, you know, so every year is a little bit different as far as how it shakes out. But I think for the last couple of years, it's kind of been how it is. And we had the, you know, the food truck in the same place and the stage in the same place. It just sets up really good. And we had the Veterans Community Project, Mini House, out there. Thank you, Mike Boddicker, Al Fitzmorris, Paul Kaufman showed up. That was awesome to see Paul. And just an amazing, even you know, Nate, you know, Jake, you've been. It's so much fun. And thank you. And there was just a lot going on in Kansas City that night. So for people that made the effort to come out, I really do appreciate it. Because this year, way different than last year, just because there was not really anything else going on at all last year. So just couldn't be more proud, and thanks to everyone.
Congratulations, man, on how much money you guys raised. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, so we'll be able to take care of a bunch of different organizations this year moving forward. So,
and for people that want more information, where can they go just to check it out and keep up to date on any future events?
I have a Facebook page, Red, White, and Bluma. I'm going to get a whole bunch of new pictures and stuff put up on there. Blumapalooza.com and redwhiteandbluma.org. Or mirror each other, and I'm going to get updates on there and do a better job of explaining to where all the different funds go to, because there's a lot of great organizations here in Kansas City that have been able to help out, and there'll be more this year because of it. So redwhiteandbluma.org, blumapalooza.com, or you can check out my Facebook, Red, White, and Bluma. And I think I'm going to create an Instagram. Red, white.
Yeah.
Hadn't done that yet.
Get on the IG.
Yeah.
That's what.
Get on the IG with me.
That's the direction to go. So.
All right, let's move on to some baseball.
Six to go.
Well, three to go for Jake Gutierrez. Will Jake be counting his money Sunday evening? He has the Royals over the 73.5 number. They need three
to
make him a winner.
Yep.
They've been playing 500 ball for the past couple weeks. And that's all they got to do is play 500 ball for six more games.
When we swept the doubleheader, I was like, all right, we got this, no problem. And now it's going to come down to it. Yesterday, I was actually at Boddicker's house yesterday when the game was on, talking about it, and just frustrated just how good of stuff that he has and continue to can't get out of his own way. So,
by the way, I don't know if you guys have looked at it this way. I was looking at the pitching matchups for Jake. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bloomer, but it's on the point that you're making. If it comes down to that last game on Sunday, Jake, do you see who's listed as the starter for the Royals?
I haven't even looked yet.
It's Kowar. So you don't want it to come down to Sunday, is what I'm saying. You want to take care of business before you get to Sunday,
maybe,
right?
I don't want to get Kowar'd.
Maybe they end up going Johnny Holstaff on Sunday.
They've got Johnny Holstaff the next couple days.
Right. Well, that's what they do anyway when Kowar pitches, right?
Yeah, he's...
Whether they plan on it or not.
If they win, that would be his first win. He's 0-5. His ERA is 11.28. So for Jake, because we've been talking, I feel like it's just all along it's been like destined to come down to that last game for Jake. I'm hoping for your case, buddy, it doesn't come down to the last game. They need to take care of
we need the drama.
That would be fun, though.
Sure, except it would. Be great.
I don't know.
I want Salvi to at least get to 48 as well to get Soler off the record.
He needs two home runs in six games, and right now he's still tied with Guerrero for and one ahead of Otani.
He's been stuck on 46 for like a whole week. What's the deal?
Right.
Well, thankfully, Guerrero's kind of slowed down as well. You can get, and he has a four-ribby lead for leading the majors over Jose Abreu. And so,
When was the last time a Royal led the league in RBS?
Oh, jeez.
Boom. I don't know the answer.
Did
Sweeney ever lead the league?
It'd have to be Sweeney, wouldn't it?
It was not Emil Brown with 81.
Well, it could have been.
He was a five-tool player.
So Sweeney had 144 in 2000.
144.
I don't know if that led the league.
That is crazy.
Was that the year he finished second in the batting title? I think that's as close as he ever came.
And thank you to Mike Sweeney, donated a Zoom meet and greet. As one of the auction items at Bloomapalooza. So that will be fun to collect on that. Tell some stories. Not only with the Royals, I'm excited about, it's going to come right down to it for the wild card.
Man.
Back and forth.
Blue Jays got a big win last night.
Yep. And then all of a sudden now the Yankees have won six in a row again. Like, what in the world? Talk about
I'm rooting for the Mariners.
Schizophrenic. I'd like to just see Toronto in the playoffs just with all their young talent. That's kind of fun.
Well, Toronto and the Yankees open up a series, three-game series against each other tonight.
Awesome.
That's going to be good to watch.
Yeah, Todd Helton had 147, and Edgar Martinez had 145. The year at Sweeney at 144. So,
So it's been a long time.
No, Salvi's going to do that. I'm very confident in that.
Yep, I think he's going to get to 48 and lead the league in RBIs. 2 of 3.
I'll take it.
Yep.
Who are you rooting for in the AL, in the wild card?
I want Toronto.
Any particular reason?
I like watching all their young talent.
Nate, who are you pulling for?
The Blue Jays. I like the Blue Jays. They're young talent. You know, I'm not a Yankees or Red Sox fan. They're kind of the, you know, they...
Antichrist.
Yeah, you got they're the big money teams and all that. And I know the Blue Jays aren't exactly crying poor, but...
Well, not only do I like the young kids, I like their dads.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Like, you know all their names because you watch their dads
right.
play.
Right. Well, and their dads were good players and good guys.
Yeah. That's right.
I want to see Seattle because the run differential is minus 52, and I want to see people melt down over that.
Also, after...
Because you know they will.
I'm rooting for just utter chaos. Like a four
playoff game,
like a four-way tie.
Yeah, so then they have to try to
63
deal with the schedule nightmare of having the one-game playoff.
That's what I'm rooting for.
So was it 10 years ago today that
complete chaos?
Longoria hit the home run for the Rays to send them into the play. Was that 10? I think I saw that today
when they played the one-off.
We ended up going. I ended up going to Texas to watch game 163. So Kevin Barr, that was my strength and conditioning guy for the Royals at the time, was the Rays strength guy. And his brother and I were at Tanner's watching the game, and there was every game mattered that night. It was crazy. And he hit that Longoria hit that home run, and they had to go to Texas for 163. And CB looked at me and goes, "Don't go to Texas?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Why wouldn't we?
Sign me up.
So we flew to Arlington the next day and watched David Price pitch his ass off and sent him to the playoffs back in, I guess that was.
God, that's 11? 10 years ago.
Was that 11? 2011. It had to have been 2011.
I remember. Cause
crazy.
Yeah.
I can't believe.
I was in Cleveland.
You were?
Yeah, working for for CBS.
Yeah. And so I sit down in my seat in Texas, and the guy sitting next to me was a player that had played for me in Alaska that ended up transferring from Tulane to KU.
Wow.
As a pitcher. Yeah, Ricky Fairchild. Like, random. Ah, what's up? Crazy small world.
I can't believe that the Dodgers are still, right now, a wild card team.
Yeah.
100 wins already. They're 156, and they're 2 games behind San Francisco.
San Francisco continues to do it.
That's unbelievable.
With a cast of characters that not many people have heard. They got the third best run differential, believe it or not.
So, Nate mentioned Jackson Kowar, who was the, his most recent start has been, again, in line with all the struggles that he's had. How concerned are you with him moving forward? Is this just something we'll look back and say, hey, it was a rookie year, he had to take his lumps? We've seen other guys, we've seen flashes of success from the other young pitchers, but we haven't seen anything from him.
And that's what's concerning, is you don't want to get to a point where what he continues to go out and do is okay, because it is not. And part of that's going to be on the organization as well. Like, if you don't put up some modicum of success at this level, you shouldn't get to stay at this level. That's just how it works. So, unfortunately, there's not anywhere else to send him. I think Omaha's wrapping it up.
And he was a minor league pitcher year. What else does he have to accomplish down there?
As good as he pitched down there, he hasn't. That hasn't translated to any success up here. So there's going to have to be some sort of continue to do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. That's the epitome of chaos, insanity. Maybe this offseason you take a different approach to things and revisit it again next year. He's going to have maybe one more opportunity on Sunday to do anything and try to go into the offseason on some sort of a positive note, because there hasn't been many.
He's given up 21 earned runs in his last 4 starts, and that's in 17 innings.
So. Man.
I mean, how do you explain? There are some players that are 4A players. I get that. Their talent level is good enough for them to have a lot of success in AAA, but it's not good enough for them to have success at the big league level. I understand that. But we're talking about a guy who was dominant at that level, yeah, and who big leaguers like yourself and Boddicker look at his stuff and say, the talent level, the physical ability is there. So how do you explain how bad it's this bad?
It's impossible to explain, and that's what's frustrating to Boddicker and frustrating to me. Like, we both said to it yesterday, man, like, wish we had that kind of stuff. You know,
this is not a 4A guy from a physical ability standpoint.
From a stuff standpoint, absolutely not. You know, mid-90s, upper-90s fastball, good changeup, decent breaking ball. Like, you have to be able to mentally be able to start to figure it out and command it. If I could explain it and knew how to fix it, I'd be a billionaire. And you know, everybody would be knocking my door down for maybe the next pitching coach somewhere. But every guy's different, you know, and you got to take a different approach and figure out what makes a guy click mentally. Maybe it's one little adjustment from a mechanic standpoint, or, you know, something that just change your mindset and something clicks. And you know what? It happens where sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know?
But you can understand why the Royals would stick with him,
absolutely,
even though he's struggling like this, because, like Steven said, there's not much for him to accomplish in AAA at this point.
Well, and that's what I was excited about, because too often in this organization, guys get pushed up here because of, one, where they got drafted and how much money they're investing in them. And Maybe they don't have success. Man, he went to Omaha and did exactly what we hoped he would do this year. And that hasn't translated to any success at the big league level, which that's concerning. You take some of the other guys, Daniel Lynch, you've seen some brilliant outings out of him. Even though I think Brady Singer long-term is going to probably be a reliever, you've seen it out of him, too, a couple times this year where he commands the ball so well with good stuff, he goes seven innings and gives up a couple hits and no runs. We just haven't seen that out of Coar yet. And we're running out. I mean, he may or may not have one more opportunity.
So if you go based on performance, especially here, you know, what they've done over the past several weeks, like Singer, like three or four of his last five starts have been really good. Carlos Hernandez has had one bad start over the past like couple months. Daniel Lynch has had several good starts in his last six or seven starts. Chris Bubich is on fire right now. And so I think that's pretty easy right there. Going into next year, Singer's in the rotation, Hernandez, Lynch, Bubich has earned it. So going into next year, is your fifth starter Jackson Coar? Is it Mike Minor since they refused to trade Mikey Minor? If they didn't want to trade him, they feel like they needed a guy, a veteran guy in there. Brad Keller, I haven't even mentioned.
Right.
Who's your starting five based on what you've seen going into next year?
I mean, I would have to say Keller if he's back healthy again, and then maybe you try Coar out of the pen, and that helps him get back. I mean, I hate it more than anybody when, let's say, let's go to the bullpen because it's easier to get guys out down there when a starter doesn't pitch worth a crap. But if that's the change in mentality that you have to have to get a guy right, then why not try that?
Some teams do utilize the bullpen to get their
go look at all the pitchers San Franciscos that have done openers and Johnny Holstaff games.
Tampa.
All the time. And it's been successful. Well, I know, Bod, you hate it. And I'm an idiot because I like it.
Tell him.
But if that's where we're at with your staff, then try it. Why not?
And it's, I think,
it's a little hard for us because our starters haven't been great all year, and that's taxed our bullpen. So we unfortunately have to do that because our starters haven't gone well, so you end up with a bullpen game instead of starting it off knowing it's a bullpen game from the jump.
Well, I think, you know, like you're, as a bullpen guy yourself, you're bristling at the old attitude of, well, just put him in the bullpen because it's easier. First of all, it's outdated, right? Like, and I'll admit, I felt that way about middle relievers for a long while. Well, middle reliever is a guy that can't start and can't close.
Right.
You know?
No man's land.
And so he's the guy that pitches the middle innings when your team's down five runs or up five runs or, you know, and then we saw with the Royals when they had that bullpen 14 of 15 that it's actually an incredible weapon to have. Guys that can, especially in those sixth, seventh, eighth innings, do you know, those are high leverage situations a lot of times when the game's
short in the game,
you know, on the line. Yeah, sure. But the one thing is, if you're struggling to get 15 outs or 18 outs and get a couple times through the order, let's go get three outs first. You know, like, let's just go see if you can. You know, the one thing you could do when you are in the bullpen is just cut it loose for one inning.
Correct.
You know, and worry about that. Have some success first before you worry about mixing in that third pitch and how am I going to set hitters up for the second time through the order and all that stuff. Just go get these guys out. And I know it's not as simple as that, but can that be a good way for a guy that's maybe struggling for confidence like Coar is to build some confidence?
You know who's a guy that I'll bring up that I was in that same, and I called him Wade Davies on this show at one point because he was such a bad starter.
Yeah.
And I remember he went on paternity leave and I was like, well, maybe his wife could have another baby next week. So he could go on paternity leave again because he was pitching that bad as a starter.
Yeah.
And then look what happened to Wade Davis. He resurrected his career by going to the bullpen. That's okay. You know, there's a lot of failed starters that turn out to be great bullpen guys, and there's nothing wrong with that. Any outs in the big leagues are good outs. You know, they're way better than AAA outs. And if that's what you end up figuring out, because of a starter, you want to try to get 150 to 200 innings out of a guy that's going to start 35 games. Is that more valuable to you than 60, 70, 80 out of the pen? Probably, over the long haul. But you have to have those pieces. And whoever they are, whether it's Jackson Kowar or Wade Davis, or you got to continue to keep finding those guys. We're a little spoiled right now because we've got five or six young guys, and the fact that all of those guys aren't going to figure it out all the time and be Cy Young contenders for the rest of their future. We wish they were, and so do they. We know that that's not going to happen. So let's figure out the best way to utilize all those guys to get the most of them while we can here in Kansas City. And then some of them will end up going somewhere else and being successful because that's just what happens.
And you also have, like I said, you've got four guys who I think have earned spots in the rotation next year. You've seen enough glimpses. And then that leaves you with Minor and that Brad Keller as veterans before you even talk about Kowar and whether he deserves a spot. There's also the idea that pitching is the currency of baseball, and Kowar is the minor league pitcher of the year, and just because he's failed at a few starts with the major league team doesn't take all the shine off of him as a prospect. They're going to have to make a move at some point. Again, I ask you, who's the center fielder for this team next year?
I don't know.
And so you've got positions, you've got depth there.
We have catching depth in the minor leagues, too, and we've talked about that at length. You know, with the year that Melendez has had, we've got some other pieces down there that are pretty good. Well, not everybody can come catch in the big league, so why don't we use a couple of those guys to plug some other holes? That's what Tampa's done such an amazing job as. I mean, their shortstop, Willy Adames.
Right.
I mean, because you got Wander Franco behind him, we can go get some other guys. I mean, that's why you continue to build your minor league system for that exact job, to go out and get other pieces.
Have you seen what Shane Baz has done since he's been called up?
I like watching him pitch.
So, again, the guy that Pittsburgh threw in the Austin Meadows Glasnow trade.
Oops.
So he's had two starts now. Isn't that just what you look at Tampa like? Boy, if Tampa could just get another electric arm, that'll help him. He's thrown 10 and two-thirds innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 14 strikeouts.
And that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's ranked
as a decent strikeout to walk.
He's ranked as the 20th best prospect in Major League Baseball. And they just flip him up at the end. Like, yeah, we got this guy, too.
Yeah. Rich, get rich.
Good for them. Well, yeah. It's funny to call Tampa rich, though. You know what I mean?
In different ways.
Good for them.
Talent.
Good for them. Yeah,
talent and prospects.
Money doesn't always equate to success in the league. So,
but the funny thing about it wasn't even a big market team that made that trade with him.
Right.
It was Pittsburgh, the exact type of team that shouldn't have made that trade.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see with J.J. Piccolo, the GM now, how, if at all, do the trading habits of the Royals change? And we know Dayton Moore still has final say, but at least the way it's laid out for us, you would presume.
Yeah, I think it could be a little bit of a different.
That J.J. Sure. might be the one that goes and works these trades and then comes to Dayton and says, hey, what do you think of this trade? Which means that the trades are being presented are going to be a little bit different. I mean, even if he and Dayton have similar philosophies, the relationships that J.J. has with every other front office guy around the league are going to be a little bit different than the relationships that Dayton Moore has. And so I think that's going to be something we don't really know yet. How aggressive is J.J. Piccolo? Is he the kind of GM that's going to be on the phone calling every other team constantly going, hey, what can we do here?
I think he is.
You know, or is he going to be the kind of guy that's more late, like, hey, let's see what kind of offers we get? All that stuff is going to be interesting to watch because those opportunities for trades seem to really be there. Like you said, when you have this much talent and tough decisions to make in your system, you get the opportunity for some trades.
Well, I mean, that's the problem you want to have, and we're in a situation. Yeah. I don't know how long we'll be there either, you know, because prospects turn into suspects in a hurry.
TikTok. And look, some organizations fall so in love with their prospects, they're not willing to trade them away. The Royals were willing to do that with Will Myers. You know, Dayton.
We don't do it a lot.
No, don't do it a lot. That's right. I mean, I'd say typically this organization tends to love their own prospects more than the rest of baseball does. Now, is JJ going to be that way too? My guess would be that he would lean more towards loving his prospects because he's worked on that side of the organization for so long. You know, but we'll see.
All right, well, then let's take with this. Who was the last Royal to lead the league in ribbies? I got the answer.
Hal McCray.
Yep.
Is that right?
I was going to say Minnesota.
What year?
Nice.
Hey, that makes up for the fact that I failed to list Hal McCray when we were doing that position by position. See that one?
What year?
is that? 1980.
No.
77.
No.
8. 78.
Nope.
79.
Everyone's too early.
84.
No. Too late.
83.
Nope.
81.
82.
Nah.
1982, he led the league with.
We'll get them all.
133.
Wow, that's pretty good.
What do you think of that?
That's impressive.
If there's a guy that deserves a statue out at Kauffman Stadium from that generation
good
of players.
To see Brian was out at Blue and Blues the other night.
Yeah.
CB
Mac out there?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I remember, I mean, a lot of former Royals players that played with Hal telling me that guy deserves a statue out there because he's the one that taught us how to win.
Gamer. Yes.
And I looked, George Brett never did lead the league in ribbies, but he was the runner-up.
17 times.
In 1980. And I like to go back to 1980 because, of course, that's when he hit 390. But this is my favorite. Even more so than hitting 390. In 1980, he was a runner-up to Cecil Cooper, right? I think four ribbies shy of leading the league. He had 118 ribbies in 117 games.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Wrap your brain around that one for a moment.
That's production.
Right? 118 ribbies in 117 games. That's pretty good. As Frank Bull would say, that's pretty good, pal. Jamie Bluma, congratulations on Blumapalooza. Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out and joining. If you need baseball lessons, come see us over at home field, 913-320-4404. Fall ball in full swing. I'm excited to get back to lessons. I feel like I've had a week off to get Blumapalooza done. So,
you give any softball lessons?
I have given some softball lessons. Worked with Seren Petro's daughters a little bit.
I thought you were going to say you work with Seren Petro as they keep working. But
well, I played softball with Petro back in the day. He needs some lessons.
He needs some help.
There's been some brief conversations with the girls.
Okay, let me know. Yep. So, I hope it goes better than it did with your boys.
Right. Well,
we bloodied each other's faces. Right. Never saw them for a lesson again.
Right.
You know what? I pushed Richie to music, so that helped.
Oh, yeah. Richie grabbed a guitar, and Phil grabbed a book. And so there you go.
Yes.
And a camera.
Right. That's exactly right.
Some man.
Yes. Thank you very much, Jamie Bluma. We'll be back after this on WHB.